Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Think Big Bodybuilding Media and Advices Radio. Today, we've got with us IFBB Pro Santi Aragon. Santi, what's going on, brother? How you been?
What up? I just finished my outside cardio.
Oh, what are you doing? You just walking then, or running, or what do you got going on?
What I do is I set my timer on my watch for like maybe an hour and a half.
Yes.
And I just move.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm just trying to move around as much as possible. So I might run. I might do like a sprint. I might go. I'm right next to the American Airlines Arena.
Okay.
So I could go up the stairs, down the stairs, up the stairs.
Oh, nice.
So it kind of takes me back to like the conditioning workouts that I did when I used to play hockey before bodybuilding.
Hell yeah! It's like it sounds very Rocky-esque to me. Only nice weather. You got nice weather there. Man, so where are we now? We finished the Arnold Classic happened a few weeks ago. I saw you there. You looked freaking phenomenal, man. I know the game plan was going to be, you know, get back in there and hit it again. What were you planning on doing next?
I was planning on doing Pittsburgh.
Okay.
That was the first one, and then that got shut down real quick.
Okay.
And what I liked about it is that they gave us plenty of time, so they didn't wait till the last minute to cancel it. So
yeah.
That's what I'm concerned about now going into New York, is that are they going to prolong, you know, to see what's actually going to, you know, happen, see, you know, wait, and then last minute, 2 weeks before the show, they're going to say, oh, we got to move it or reschedule it or cancel.
Yeah.
I had Pittsburgh, I had New York, and I had Puerto Rico. And Puerto Rico, Tim Garner, he just put in the on his Instagram that they rescheduled it to the last show of the year.
Okay. Is that going to be like August or something, I thought, or?
Yep. Okay. So they changed, as you would know, they changed like some of the rules, as far as they had a last show already planned that could qualify you for the Olympia, but that's thrown out right now.
Yeah.
And they're just kind of now winging it, you know.
Right.
The concern that I have, and I had this conversation with my trainer Carlos, is all these shows now that are being canceled, how are they going to fill up the Olympia stage?
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting Olympia, that's for sure, man. I mean,
how are they going to fill up the Olympia stage? If you, let's just say hypothetically, you have 8 shows confirmed in the U.S. right now that so far have not been canceled.
Yeah.
That's only 8 people. And then you have to consider that somebody is not going to win a show twice.
Right.
So what the hell are they going to do?
Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, I think there's been like this call for dialing things back to an extent, you know, and I've heard it in like the last 5 years saying like, oh, we need to just have the best of the best. And just because it's going to be potentially a smaller show this year, I don't necessarily know if that's going to be better. I mean, this is a mess, man. And I feel like overall for a guy like yourself, I mean, I understand what it's like to be prepping. You know, I saw you there at the Arnold. You look fantastic. What, did you end up, you got first call out. So was it sixth place did you end up?
Sixth, yeah.
Okay. And that's fantastic, man. We're looking at, that is one of the best stages in the world, okay? You had previously competed in 212. You moved into the classic division. You know, and I know what it's like. The second you get on stage, you learn so much. Like all of a sudden, you retain so much more information about, okay, so next time I'm going to do this and this.
You're 100%
in this. And I know you. I know walking away from that, that's exactly where the gears started turning. So that just fired you up for the next show, for Pittsburgh. Yeah, yeah.
Kind of take mental notes about everything that kind of worked, everything that didn't work. And it's funny because all of these things are things that you already knew last year going into prep, and then you're like, oh shit, like I remember this. And I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
One is pumping up backstage.
Okay.
I am, and I know a lot of people that probably listen to your show listen to the Nick Trigilli podcast where he was with Chad Nichols about Rami pumping up backstage.
Okay.
He did like 2 air squats and his legs blew up.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of fall in that same thing where I look okay like walking around, but as soon as I start picking up weights, like I start blowing up like really quick.
Huh.
And last year when I did Puerto Rico, I had that problem in that first show in Puerto Rico where I overpumped and it just pulled everything out of my legs.
Oh, okay.
Shifted the blood from everything from my legs to my upper body, and I looked full blown. I looked crazy, but it was very difficult. It was very difficult for me to flex my legs because I just pulled everything out of it. Then when me and Andrew went and did 212 for Dallas, we had that in mind already where we're like, we're not going to even pump up. We're going to sit there, let everybody pump up, and as soon as they line you up and you got two people ahead of you before you do your non-music routine,
yeah,
just start pumping up like never before.
Okay.
Did that, and it worked perfectly. And that was just a small mental note that, you know, these small details you forget, but then, you know, the next show you're like, okay, I'm gonna nail it the next show.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with all these delays and stuff now, who knows when the next show is gonna be.
Yeah, it kind of pulls you out of your groove. So that was kind of the first thing I was gonna ask you, was the things you learned from this show. So at the Arnold, you know, you walk away with things you want to change. You also walk away with things that you say, oh yeah, okay, this really worked. What else really worked at the Arnold for you this year?
Well, I think that me eating less, if I'm trying to go into the classic division, I can get away with eating very little.
I bet you can, dude, because I mean, for anybody who hasn't been following Santi for a long time, I mean, as a 212 competitor, you could be like a freaking fire hydrant, thick and wide, you know, just you could be a really like big 212, like thick looking dude. That's obviously, that's not the look that you're going for here.
It's
right?
Not the look for classic. And I have to eat very little. Like, most people would be very surprised on how little I eat going into a show that's for classic. You know, we're dealing with five meals, we're doing about 50 grams of carbs, we're doing about 5 ounces of protein per meal.
Okay.
And I still retain a lot of my size. I still retain a lot of fullness. I still retain a lot of different, you know, characteristics that make you look at me and make you think, oh, you know, he just had a carb up meal, or he's probably eating just enough. No, I'm eating less than my girlfriend.
Damn.
Like times two going into these shows. And, you know, it's nice in the sense that it works, but it sucks because I'm constantly starving all the time.
No kidding, man. So you were eating low. That worked. That was kind of one of the successful things. Is that something you would even consider pushing further into, you know, assuming that, say, Pittsburgh had happened on track? Were you going to continue driving the food down further, or what were you going to do from there?
We would have increased the food just a little bit to create just a little bit of a higher baseline.
Okay.
So if I'm eating, let's just say I'm eating five meals, I was doing at the very end, I shifted to keto the last 2 weeks going into the show. And not so much because of fat burning or anything like that. It was just to ensure that I can make weight.
Oh,
so
what were you talking like weight wise 2 weeks out?
So my weight limit for classic is 180.
Okay.
And about 2 weeks out, I was sitting at about maybe 184, 185.
Okay.
But things don't move on me ever.
Okay.
So it's not like, oh, 184, 185, like waking up that, hey, you know, you're going to lose a pound a week. No, I'll start a prep at a weight, and I won't, my scale won't move for, you know, 8-9 weeks.
Okay.
On that prep. So we won't move. So it that right there, when shifting to keto 2 weeks out, is just mostly just to keep in mind, okay, we're going to deplete the muscle. We're going to make sure that whatever weight that we're actually seeing on the scale, that's an accurate weight depleted.
Yeah.
You know, we're not taking into consideration that last week, oh, well, when we pull carbs, you know, you're going to drop down. No. We need to know, because we need to know how aggressive we need to get if we're overweight that last week or that last day going into the weigh-in. So
that makes sense.
So after all that, and after the show's done and we make weight and everything, and we eat a little bit of carbs, blah, 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 the after the show, the plan was now we'll shift back to that before the 2 weeks out. So we'll introduce carbs back in, pull from keto, and then start increasing, because I had about 7 weeks between the Arnold and between Pittsburgh, where every single week we could add, you know, maybe 30 grams of carbs, give or take. Mm. And that 4 weeks out period, that's when we'll start pulling again.
Okay. So you're going to fill back out and then...
Yeah. So it's very important to create, you know, if you're shifting from show to show within a decent amount of time, you know, 7 weeks is a decent amount of time.
Yeah.
You have to, you may lose a little bit of that sharpness, but you really have to add some food so that you can have something to pull. Because if we kept that 2 weeks out, 1 week out diet all the way 7 weeks, now we're tapping into muscle. You know, my energy levels for training are going to be there. It's non-existent.
Yeah.
You know, I'll go through three sets and I'm exhausted. So it's very important that, yes, you may lose a little bit of that conditioning, a little bit of that sharpness within those 7 weeks before you start pulling, but it's very important to increase that baseline a little bit.
Sure. No, that makes total sense, man. Looking at the Arnold, what was something that you would have changed, something that you feel could have been done differently?
It's very... Listening to this, it's almost like I think about it all the time after every show. It's like, well, I could have done this. Yeah. I could have done that. The problem is that you have to make a decision based on what you have at that moment.
Sure.
There's no cookie cutter. I'm going to eat 400 grams of carbs going into the show. And then, you know, day two, I'll do this. It's kind of like you just have to kind of go by the hour.
Yeah.
But if I had to... think about it, I probably would have, or Andrew, looking back, he probably would have been just a little bit more aggressive.
Okay.
with the carb up, maybe just one more meal going into that prejudging, because I was a little bit sharper and harder at finals, but already my obliques were already starting to blow out. And that's a problem that I have, is that I have very thick obliques just from so many years of playing hockey. Mm. And that's the one thing that we need to constantly in classic, that waistline.
Yeah.
We need to keep that in check. The problem is that when I try to keep those obliques in check, everything else stays flat and they don't get hard. Mm. So if I start eating carbs, let's say for 212, we started carbing up 3-4 days before prejudging already, which was phenomenal because I was having a great time.
I bet.
Those obliques, even if they get blown out just a little bit, you kind of have to balance it out. It's like, okay, your obliques are going to be just slightly blown out a little bit, but everything else is going to be hard as shit. You know, your legs are going to be hard, your back's going to be hard, you're going to be full. So it kind of doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Because everybody kind of has that thick midsection in 212. Classic, you have that wasp waist.
Yeah.
You got these guys that have hollow bones, and you really have to take into consideration that waistline. So it's constantly a balancing act. It's like, okay, how do your legs feel? How does your chest, how do your shoulders feel, or how do they look? And then we also have to look at your waist.
Yeah, that's really the difference, isn't it? In you know, bodybuilding at 212, open bodybuilding, I mean, you're there to, you're creating an illusion. So yeah, your waist might be a little bit bigger. And you know, it's like, I think people are getting just, honestly, I almost feel like people are getting overly sensitive to like the gut thing nowadays. That, yeah, you know, if you're going to be a guy like William Bonick, I would not say he has a gut by any mean. But
no.
If you look at his midsection, it is going to be sticking out some, you know, compared to like a classic guy. But he's got that balance, man, where like up top, he's just so round, so freaky full. Proportionately, it's really not an issue whatsoever. You know?
It isn't. And especially the way that he poses.
Yeah.
You know, he'll never do a front double bicep, you know, straight on.
Mm.
He kind of does what I do, where we'll tilt ourselves in a way to kind of just streamline that waist. You know, it's tough. It doesn't look as good on me on a classic stage because I'm dealing with guys that have, you know, 26 inch waist.
Yeah.
But if I'm on a 212 stage hitting that same pose, doing a vacuum, and especially with the taper of the posing trunks as well, that really helps the way that the posing trunks look in bodybuilding versus classic. that really just brings, makes it, again, the illusion that your waist is that much smaller.
Huh. And you're saying because, so what, you get more of that V cut, longer legs type look, yeah, versus
the longer legs, yeah, that the part that sits on your waist, it's much slimmer.
Yeah.
You can lift it up so that it creates that illusion that your legs are longer. I have a long torso versus my stumpy legs, almost like a Lee Priest.
Yeah.
So if you watch Lee Priest, when he used to hit his poses, especially his front lat spread, he actually used to grab his posing trunks.
Oh, yeah.
He would grab his posing trunks and lift them up to make his legs actually look longer.
Yeah.
And that actually helped. So whoever's listening to this, go on YouTube and watch Lee Priest pose, especially when he does his front lat spread and his rear lat spread. He'll actually grab his posing trunks and lift them up.
Hmm. You're a guy who you've loved posing. As long as I've known of you, you've always been a guy who's been kind of like really a student of the art of posing. Man, first of all, your routine was fantastic, and even like the 1 minute routine that that you guys did, or is it 1 minute, yeah, in the morning at prejudging?
Yeah, it's like a 6 second non music.
Yeah, I mean, even that was fantastic, man. How often do you practice your posing?
I should be practicing more. I don't practice enough. Unfortunately, I guess I fell into that. Mindset where, it gets closer and I'm pretty good at it already. But it's not even being good at it, it's being conditioned.
Yeah.
It's being conditioned at it. And I think that's another thing going into the next show, is that I'll be more conditioned in posing. Not so much that I have to practice my posing itself, it's just holding the poses, making sure that I'm breathing correctly, and looking back at videos of the Arnold, I can pick up these things and, take mental notes that, once I hit this pose, I need to do this, I need to do that, and just kind of correct those things. But back when I was an amateur, and especially going into nationals, when I got my pro card,
yeah,
man, I'd wake up every single morning, starting 7 weeks out, I'd wake up every single morning, and the first thing that I would do when I would take my first piss in the morning is I'd get in front of my mirror in my bathroom, and I'll start with every single pose and I'll hold it for 5 seconds. And I was still living at home at this time, so my dad he's always up super early, and he's super into all this bodybuilding
stuff. That's cool.
He has no background in bodybuilding whatsoever.
Yeah.
But he would call out the poses for me.
Oh, that's cool, man.
He would call out the poses for me, and then we would hold every pose for 5 seconds, and we would do that for a week. And then the following week, we would add another 2-3 seconds to it. And then 2-3 seconds. And every single week, by the time I was done, I was holding poses for 30 seconds.
Damn.
Every single pose. So it's all about the conditioning part, not so much the conditioning part versus the actually hitting the pose.
Yeah, you don't realize. It's funny because, anytime I've ever worked with somebody who's, a new guy, he doesn't know what it's like. I feel like no matter what, you're in for a surprise as to how much work it takes when you're actually on stage. Even if they move fast, man, if they compare you to somebody, they ask you to hold that pose, being able to control your stomach, being able to stay tight, not shake, man, that takes a ton of effort. And that's what you mean by conditioning.
It's the adrenaline of being on stage. There's nothing like it,
yeah,
Yeah. Even somebody like myself that has been doing it for over 10 years, it's still, you get on stage, especially at the Arnold stage, I was like, wow, this is insane.
Yeah.
It doesn't get old. So that adrenaline rush, you try to stay as calm as possible, but you're still going to get those butterflies.
Dude. Yeah. And speaking of the Arnold, man, their setup is just so cool. I have to say, I'm so impressed with the whole production that they put together and all that. It's really a cool experience, man. I could only imagine standing on that stage.
We had crickets at the region.
Yeah. I was cheering for you. I was there.
So we did I go out on stage, I do the 60 second non-music routine, and then after you're done, you're kind of just like, okay, I'm done. Like, bye.
Yeah. So, some guys, they say, I don't really care about the competition. The competition is just, the end, and the prep is what I really love. And then there's other guys that are in the other camp where they're like, man, I just love the getting on stage, the experience. It sounds like you are one of the guys who gravitate toward that other camp. I mean, I'm sure you love training. I know you love training, every aspect of it, but it sounds like competition and being the performance is a big part of it for you.
I do. I constantly am always thinking, and I know me and Terrence were talking about this backstage. He has a playlist full of songs that are like potential songs that he's going to be doing in the future for guest closings or forever. I'm the same way. It's kind of like every song that I listen to, I'm always thinking, I'm like, can that be turned into a routine? Yeah. Or where can I use this? Or how can I enhance this? Or what poses can I do, you know, in certain parts of this song? And that kind of happened with this, you know, the song that the performance that I did at the Arnold. And I was thinking, like, you know, what can I do to spice it up? Because I know I'm going to be going up against somebody like Terrence Ruffin, which is a insane poser.
Oh, yeah.
What can I do that's a little bit different, you know, than I know that he's going to do, that's going to keep, you know, something in mind when people remember that routine? Music choice is obviously very important. I constantly tell people that if you're going to be choosing music for a posing routine, you have to feel the music. There's got to be some type of connection to that song, because it's really going to show on stage when you actually perform it. You know, the emotional aspect of the song, that's one. And then two is what I was thinking, what can I do to spice up the routine? So the glove.
Oh yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, it was a really fun routine to do. I love that particular song because it reminds me of the 90s in Miami, just that 90s vibe, 80s vibe, Miami Vice. So it just kind of fit exactly with what I wanted to do.
That's so funny, man, because Victoria and I were sitting in the audience. She said the same thing. It's like there was definitely – I got the 80s feel. Maybe it was like later 80s feel. But definitely, I feel like you translated that really well. You mentioned Lee Priest as somebody who you looked to for, you know, kind of posing motivation, and that was probably more for 212. I'm sure that you know your mindset's okay. I would think, you know where I was going, guys that you look up to. So Labrada is one of the guys that you really think about now, huh?
Yeah. Cuban. Posing. I mean, when I first started bodybuilding, and when I was coming up with routines and stuff like that and posing, it was like I had on my laptop every single routine that he's ever done as all my tabs.
Huh, no kidding.
So I could constantly just binge watch one, I would watch it. And then I go to the next one in 1989, 1990, and I just watch every single routine over and over and over again. And, you know, you could catch different poses that I do that, you know, if you watch any of his videos, you could be like, oh, I've seen that one done before. So it's kind of like, it's just, you kind of want to create your own style, but at the same time, you want to get poses that fit your physique. Sure. And you know, there's certain poses that we do in certain body parts, and we have a very similar physique, I think. And I think that it translates to the poses that he's already perfected. And just here's the blueprint. Here you go. Use them, because I don't think anybody else is going to use them. So go ahead and take them.
Yeah, and then from there, you make it your own. You know, and that's what I've seen out of your posing. You make it your own. There's no question about it.
Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.
I got to ask then. So, you know, all this excitement around the Arnold, all this kind of motivation that built up, you know, and now we don't quite know what's going to happen. Everybody out there who's even a guy like myself, I'm not competing right now. You know, there's a lot of people who've never even stepped on a stage. We all want to keep making progress. We've all kind of stopped and we've had to ask ourselves, like, oh, what do we do now? We've got people that are, you know, at home trying to figure out how to use bands, doing Jane Fonda workouts and all this stuff, man, you know, trying to do body weight, you know, resistance, all that. We're people that all love the sport, but at the same time, man, you're a guy, this is your living, you know, whether it's through getting paid at a contest or just the businesses that you've created around bodybuilding. What are you doing right now? Where's your mind at to continue being your best?
You know, I the first thing, and this happens to me every single prep, is that the first thing that I do when I get into a prep and I know that I'm possibly going to be doing multiple shows in the year, yeah, I always tell myself the same thing. When this is not fun anymore, I'm done. And that was the point last year where I did three shows, and the first day that I got on the cardio machine after the third show, I stopped. I was there for like 10 minutes and I stopped it and I said, this is not fun anymore.
Okay.
That was I texted Andrew right there and I said, I'm done for the rest of the year. Because I don't want that feeling. I don't want it to last that this is a burden. Mm. I don't want bodybuilding to feel, because I see so many amateurs, and I felt like this as an amateur. I can't wait until this ends. I can't wait until this is done so I could do this. Nobody's holding a gun to your head to do any of this. You could stop at any time.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to make sure that I always have that feeling, that I never have a negative feeling about prepping or getting ready for a show. So that's why I tell myself that if I'm not having fun anymore, I'm done.
Yeah.
Or I'm done for the year. And right now, I'm still having fun. I'm still having a great time. I don't feel like this is a burden. I don't wake up in the morning like, oh my God, I gotta, you know, not eat, and I gotta do this and I gotta do that. The other part of this is I use the competing part as a marketing tool for the Paragon brand. So everything that I do for competing, I'm not there to get a paycheck, you know, to live off of the paycheck of the stage.
Right.
Everything that I do leading to the point of the stage is the paychecks that I'm getting.
Right on.
So it's definitely a different mindset as opposed to, like, let's say when I was an amateur, that I was doing this to kind of set myself up, or I was just doing this for fun. Like, this is my job now.
Right.
Like, wake up in the morning and this is my job, to promote the brand, to be in shape, and then to get people, you know, in the mix to want to get into shape and want to buy what the Paragon brand has, you know, the waist trainers, the apparel, etc. So it's definitely the mindset. As far as, like, everybody being in limbo and stuff like that, like, yeah. I completely understand. I think that if I really didn't have a plan, you know, to do other shows, I probably would have said, you know what, this is a perfect time where I could grow and maybe do 212 next year full time. But as of right now, you know, I'm still on my grind. I feel good. I feel good about the amount of food that I'm eating right now, the amount of activity that I'm doing right now. And as long as I'm in shape, business is usually pretty good.
Okay.
That's fine.
So you're having fun with it. I think that, dude, that is such a good message. That's key. I mean, at the same time, you've got added stresses now. You know, everything that's going on with the pandemic, it's not easy, man. How are you able to continue training and getting all the foods in that you need too?
Well, as far as the training goes, without giving too much away, you know, I've made very good friends throughout the years here that own gyms, and I'm very grateful for them, you know, and I'll leave it at that.
Right on.
But as far as the food goes, and it's funny because yesterday I Muscle and Strength, which is a very, very popular YouTube page where they do, you know, videos of eating and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They were supposed to fly out the week after the Arnold so that we can do some work for the supplement company Rise that I'm sponsored by. And they had to cancel all that. So we're doing, yesterday I was filming like a vlog style day in the life kind of eating, taking you through my meals, etc. And a lot of people have been asking, like, oh, you know, what do I do if I can't eat, you know, on my diet and stuff? I'm like, guys, there's no excuse to not stay on your diet if that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
Because, no, again, nobody's forcing you to stay on a diet. You got to do it because you want to do it. And you'll find a way to do it. So, for instance, the first week or two that the pandemic was going on, there was no eggs.
Yeah.
Eggs didn't exist at the grocery store. But I have plenty of protein powder to substitute the eggs with. Like, it's not rocket science.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm having oats with my eggs, then I'm having protein powder with my oats.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not rocket science. Another thing, you know, like if like, for instance, they didn't have oats or they didn't have the Gerber, which I love, which they didn't have Gerber cream of rice for some time, and they didn't have oatmeal. No big deal. I use rice. You know, I could use sweet potato, which these things maybe aren't on my usual diet. But in a time like this, you just substitute it. Use damn Google to convert your macros, you know? Convert your macros. It's not rocket science. Use rice cakes. Use tuna packets. Use, you know, there's so many things that you can do to substitute so that you can stay on track and stay on plan. So anytime that I heard anybody in my Q&As talk about an excuse, I'm like, you're coming up with an excuse because you don't want to do it. Because if you wanted to do it, you would find a way.
Yeah.
Like cardio. Oh, I can't. The gym is closed. I was doing cardio. You could do cardio if you have an apartment building. Just go up and down the stairs. You know? Go outside. If your cardio is 40 minutes long that you have to do, set your timer for an hour, hour and a half, and go walk or jog. Maybe you can't do the Stairmaster, but you could definitely burn the same amount of calories that you were doing on the stairs doing other forms of cardio. So again, I don't see that. I don't see an excuse on any of that. Now, weight training wise, that's a little bit tougher because, you know, people aren't going to have access to weights. And, you know, there is a plethora of videos floating on Instagram of home workouts that if you don't know what to do, just look on Instagram. Everybody's writing, everybody's doing videos on home workouts. So you could do home workouts, you could do the bands, you could do any of that. You won't lose a ton of size on this. You'll lose volume, muscle volume, but as far as muscle wasting, as long as you're not stuffing your face with Pop-Tarts and peanut butter and all this stuff, you should be fine. As soon as the gym opens, all that comes back really fast.
Hell yeah. I think that's a good point, man. And I like what you're saying, because if you freaking love it, it's not gonna stop you, really. I feel like for me, the first thing I had, the issue I had was I had some specific challenges and that I was trying to do, you know, like I was trying to dumbbell press X amount of pounds and I couldn't do that anymore. You know what I mean? But I redefined my challenges. And after I did that, then I could still have fun with it. It's I guess for me, it was about finding some new challenges. And I think that's what everybody has to do, really.
Have to adapt to work where we are very good at adapting as human beings,
yeah.
You know, whether it's through a pandemic, whether it's through, you know, government regulations on certain things, we always find a way to figure it out somehow. We figure it out somehow.
And it sounds like you're that as a bodybuilder. You know, some bodybuilders, they can't adapt because, especially the younger guys, they don't understand. Well, yeah, you could switch out that, you know, oatmeal for rice or whatever. You've been doing this long enough, and it sounds like you love it enough that you have been able to be adaptive. I guess that, to me, almost like that's the sign of a successful person, is somebody who can make those changes.
Well, you have to, because, you know, in a perfect world, everything is the way exactly that you want it to be. Yeah. Like, I'll give you an example. Yeah, was it yesterday or the day before? The day before yesterday. Had my day planned, had everything good to go. I was going to go to the gym. They were, you know, I was going to go train, blah, blah, blah. I just go outside, blew a tire. Boom, my whole day's done,
yeah. You
know, at that point. But you have to adapt, you know? I'm like, shit, like, now how am I going to do cardio? How am I going to do this? How am I going to do that? Very simple. I had the tow truck pick up my car. They took it to the tire kingdom. They said, oh, it'll be done in like an hour, hour and a half. Great. I'm going to use that time to do cardio. I'm just going to walk.
Yeah.
I'm going to, instead of me sitting in the waiting room, sitting there, I'm going to use this time to be active and walk. Walked over to Home Depot. It was like a mile and a half away. Picked up what I needed to do. Walked back. By the time it was already ready to go, and I finished my cardio for the day.
Hell boom. Yeah.
So it's like you have to, you can't put everything on paper and expect that everything's going to turn out perfectly. But you have to be able to adapt.
Yeah.
And that's a perfect example of how you adapt with certain things and still get your fitness in while, you know, going through whatever it is that you weren't planning.
Yeah, I think something I'm thinking about, I want to point out too is, you know, there's always the mindset that people could have looking at you, Santi, and be like, well, it's easier for him because he's a pro. He's got all these things, you know, available. But honestly, I won't lie, you know, early on, I had thoughts like that in my life. But the reality is the reason that he's a pro is because he was able to ensure that he was going to be able to have these things at hand, that he was good, that you were going to be able to adapt. Mm-hmm. You know, people who have like supplement contracts, like when Muscle Tech was huge, that's when I remember thinking like, oh man, these guys don't have to train. They just sit at home and live the life and train they don't have to work. You know, they just sit at home and train, live the life. And, you know, Muscle Tech pays them. But the reality is they worked their asses off to get to the point where they could do that, you know? Uh-huh. So,
and don't get me wrong. Some of them did do that. Those are the ones that are not successful right now.
Ooh, that's a good point, man. That's a good point. Yeah.
I mean, those are the ones that didn't set themselves up for the future and just kind of, you know, allowed whatever came in to come in at that time and think that this is going to be forever.
Yeah.
Which in fitness, when you have a contract, as you would know, it's never forever.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was with Muscle Tech for 4 years.
Really?
That was my first contract as a pro.
Was that like a full contract deal? Did you have to work or anything?
Full-fledged contract for 4 years.
Wow. And how did you handle that? Like mentally, did you decide like, hey, I'm going to quit working and stay at home? Or what did you do?
Oh, no. I had a cell phone business at the time that I did cell phone repairs. And it was very successful too. So I had two means of income coming in at that time, which was phenomenal. It was great money. At that time, now I was very young and stupid. Very young and stupid. And, you know, now that I think back, I would have done things much differently financially. I would have done things much differently. But you know, those big contracts, again, those big contracts are never forever. So the ones that are successful, like, let's say, Jay Cutler, for instance,
yeah.
I'm sure they took that money that he was making at that time and had somebody, you know, help him out with where to put this money, you know, put this away rather than spending it on cars and you know, crazy things.
Absolutely. So, you know, moving forward, you said you could, if you weren't having fun with this anymore, you could shut it down. You could go into an off season and try to grow. What would you need to improve to be even more successful in the 212 division if you were to move back to that full time?
Just add weight everywhere. Just add muscle everywhere. Not, you know, I have to improve my back more. That's always been an issue for me. It's gotten better over the years. Ever since I started training with Carlos and we started doing a lot of progressive overload.
Okay.
He saw a lot of improvements in every area. I don't use progressive overload on my legs because that I can't even imagine if I used progressive overload on my legs. My body would just be super disproportionate at that point. If you see me train legs, I look like a bikini girl training legs.
No kidding.
Yeah, I look like a bikini girl training legs. I had this conversation yesterday with somebody online that they were asking me about, you know, they saw a video of me doing legs and they're like, well, you don't use too much weight. And I'm like, well, I don't use too much weight. I just make the weight feel like it's really heavy, you know, slow movements, a lot of time under tension, and just to preserve my knees. My knees have been kind of an issue these last couple of years.
Okay.
But just to kind of, and they've responded very well to it. I mean, they look bigger and bigger every single year that I compete.
Yeah.
So now it's never the issue. I just think that to be a competitive 212, I just have to allow myself to get up to a certain weight and then just kind of stay there. my weight, Andrew didn't let me go above about 195 pounds, considering that we have to make a weight of 180. So I think that if I can get myself up to like 210, and then come back down to a solid like 190, 193 around there, I'd be pretty good at you know, competing in the 212. When I did 212 at the Dallas Europa, I weighed in with all my clothes on, fully carved up on 2 gallons of water at 189.
Okay, yeah.
So I was still shy of 190, and you know, you got some of these guys that are, you know, almost naked, spitting, not doing what I have to do to make weight for Classic.
Yeah,
doing it for 212. So it's not even about the weight that I have to be. I have to be 212 pounds. No, I just need to add muscle slowly to the right places and make sure that it's solid, good muscle, that it's not just, you know, a weight that's on the scale and it doesn't actually solidify into anything once I diet down.
So what do you like better, 212 or Classic? If you had your choice to really excel at one of them, where would you be? It sounds to me like you would like to be able to be as huge as possible. But then I don't know if you did that, you couldn't pose with the same finesse that you do, you know?
Oh, watch my videos in Dallas.
Yeah?
They were just – they, and I think that's an advantage that I have is that it brings that modern classic You know, it's a little bit different rather than, you know, most of the people that compete in 212, it's bodybuilding.
Yeah.
Then you have that classic flair that if somebody like Terrence were to go into 212, he would bring that flair as well, you know.
So you're not seeing it as like two completely different things then?
No, okay. I think merging them together and creating my own view of what 212 bodybuilding, you know, classic bodybuilding is to look like, and it'd just be kind of a throwback and kind of be like my little signature to bodybuilding at that point. I think that I like 212, but I also don't like 212, considering that I would have to, I mean, we have to talk about it. I have to up the supplementation.
Okay.
I think that right there, I'm very open about all the supplementation that I use going into all my shows. I do a weekly update on my Instagram that details everything that I'm doing going into Classic. And most people, they still think I'm full of shit when I tell them the amounts that I'm taking. Now, going into 212, I would have to probably double everything that I'm doing to be competitive. I mean, they would still be very low, considering the amounts that I hear, but still, I think that's the only thing that's been holding me back from doing 212.
Okay. Can you give us an idea then? Like, what are we talking for the Arnold Classic prep?
So for the Arnold Classic prep, I had to pull Tess about 4 weeks out.
Okay.
So
all together,
Tess,
huh?
Tess was out 4 weeks out. And again, that was just to ensure that we have an accurate reading of my weight. So that was the sole purpose. And, you know, I didn't really lose that much fullness or anything like that. So Tess has never been an issue with me. If I'm doing 212, obviously we would leave it in, you know, as long as we can.
Sure.
But for Classic, we cut that out. So before we cut it, we were running about only 200 milligrams of TRT dose.
Okay.
Of Tess. So that was prop. Trend ranges anywhere between 150 and 300 per week. Oral Winnie was at 50 until 4 weeks out. We bumped it up to 100. Proviron at 4 weeks out, we were at 50 milligrams. I didn't take any AIs once the test was out. We had a buffer period of about 1 week before we pulled the Aromacin.
Oh, no kidding.
So there was no Letro, there was no Aromacin, there was no nothing leading into the Arnold. No T3. Clen was at 80 micrograms. And what else? Am I missing any? Oh, Halo, 14 days at 20 milligrams.
How beneficial do you feel like Halo is?
It takes my physique to the next
level. Does it? Okay.
Yeah, it really makes me look like concrete.
Yeah.
At last week.
Yeah, so, I mean, overall, I mean, it's not a beginner cycle, but we're talking first call out at the Arnold Classic, one of the best shows in the world.
It's not a beginner cycle, but I also, if I look at a cycle like that, yeah. I wouldn't say this is right. This is an Arnold Classic, you know, top six cycle either.
No, of course not. No, of course not. Especially, I mean, 200 tests. So you're a guy who prefers lower test in general, would you say? Is that what, I mean, I know you said you would use more, but are you a guy who is more of like a use moderate to lower test along with like another anabolic or androgenic type thing?
So like I'll run, so after I'm done competing and there's no more shows, I run TRT the entire way. I don't come off. I've tried in the past to come off and it's taken me so long for my body to bounce back.
Sure.
That it's just mentally, I couldn't handle it. Yeah. Not visually. It wasn't anything visually. It was just hormonally.
Yeah.
I couldn't handle my test levels being so low.
Sure.
We're talking about low, like 50.
Yeah.
50 low, and they will not bounce back. So.
Which is, that's going to be unhealthy too. You know, I mean, long term. Yeah.
Very unhealthy. So about 2 years ago, I started doing TRT full time. And the only time that I actually run a full fledged cycle is prepping for a show.
No kidding.
I get a lot of questions like, oh, do you do an off season blast
yeah.
and all this other stuff? I'm like, if I did that, I'll never make weight.
Huh. Yeah.
So I can't do that. So it we'll have to do, like, let's say if I'm doing a 16 week prep, maybe the first 4 weeks we'll get aggressive with maybe the anabolics that just get that initial start,
yeah.
and then we'll start pulling back from there.
Huh.
So like this prep, for instance, at about 14 weeks out, we were running a test blend. So we were running a prop, almost like a sus, but it was only prop and test E.
Okay.
So running that combined, it was about 750.
Okay. Still, yeah. still average to moderate, you know, for a competitor, low end still.
Definitely. So it was about 750 for the week. We ran it with mass at about 200 milligrams per week. And then we ran, I love to run in the very beginning of prep for about 4 weeks and a draw at 50 milligrams.
Really? At the start, huh?
Yeah, right at the start, just to get things going. There's a buffer period with the test, even with a prop in there. I've always seen that there was a buffer period, and it really gets me motivated in those first 4 weeks because I could visually see changes in the gym, you know, with my pump and everything like that.
Yeah.
So not only is it helping, you know, yeah, with the gym and everything, but I think that mental spark really makes a huge difference, that mental spark those first 4 weeks, because if you're kind of just going into that prep, it really takes a little bit of time before you start seeing changes in your body.
Sure.
And you might just kind of be like, oh, well, you know, I don't feel a pump still and blah, blah, blah. That right there, that Anadrol really gets things moving those first 4 weeks.
Hmm. Yeah, that makes sense, man. Interesting. Tell me about the companies before we go. Let me know what are you doing business wise? How do you basically keep your life cool as it is, being able to compete here and do everything you do?
So I have all the waist trainers at a warehouse, and luckily my dad owns the warehouse.
Nice.
So the warehouse doesn't close for me.
Excellent.
So I have an employee that goes in three times a week. He runs the orders. I do all the customer service. So anybody that talks to a customer service rep, I'm the customer service rep. So I do all the emails. I do all the online stuff. I do all the graphics for Paragon. I do all the design for the apparel for Paragon.
Nice.
I do all of it's almost like a one-man show. My girlfriend Laura, she runs the Instagram page for Paragon so that I can concentrate on the promotion part on my own page itself.
Yeah.
Then, you know, we're developing a fat burning cream right now. That's in the works. It got delayed because of stuff, but it's in development right now. And then I also have partnerships with Rise, the supplement company Rise, MegaFit Meals, and Young LA. So I have a couple other, you know, sponsors that I have to also thank as well.
That's cool, man. How long have you had Paragon? How long have you been doing the waist trainers for?
Paragon has been around the brand and the waist trainers for almost 3 years.
Okay.
But wasn't until last year that business shot up by like 200%.
Really? Why was that?
And that was again because me competing.
Oh, okay.
And all of a sudden I started getting all these views and all of these new people coming onto my Instagram page, and just things came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I literally went from one box under my desk at my cell phone store that I was still running. That I sold that already.
Nice.
It was under my desk where, oh, you know, a person ordered. So I would go and I would pack it right there, and I'd have the post office come in. And then from 1 month to another, it turned into, you know, I'm doing 10 orders a day. And then it turned into now I have boxes of all the different colors, all the different sizes. And it literally within 3 months, I had to move operations into a warehouse.
Hell yeah.
I was very thankful for everything that was going on at that time, you know. And again, like you, with this whole thing about adapting, and
yeah.
You know, you have to be able to adapt to certain situations. That was huge, because all of this new business, I didn't know what I was getting myself into. Huh. I didn't know the systems. I didn't have a schedule. I didn't know how to do inventory. I didn't know how to predict how many people of what sizes we're going to order, so that I have this, you know, ordered ahead of time, so we don't go out of stock.
Yeah.
To learn this on the fly. And again, if you want to learn something and you want to perfect something, you will find a way.
Hmm. That's cool, man. So, and you know what, too, this is a good example of, you know, you obviously you put a lot of work into your bodybuilding. You've developed quite a following. But if you didn't do something with that, nothing would happen. You basically, you created this. You invented this. You created a living for yourself. It's amazing the time that we're in, you know, with you know, the just social media and with our ability to connect to people, that you're able to pretty much, you could make a living now. With these products, man.
And that's why we live in the best country in the fucking world. So I'll say it right here. I don't give a shit what anybody says. And they complain about this country. There is no other country on planet Earth where you can live off of your phone through social media and create a brand and become independent financially.
Hell yeah.
Because of Instagram.
Hell yeah.
Okay? So cut all that shit about, you know, complaining about all this. We live in the best country on the planet.
I heard, and I don't know how true this is, you know, I follow a lot of different social media marketing, YouTube marketing people and stuff. I heard that they are going to monetize Instagram like they have YouTube. You hear anything about that?
I haven't, and if they do, phenomenal.
Absolutely.
People are going to be making a shit ton more money.
I totally agree, man. All right. Anything else we should talk about before we go here? I'll have all your information, by the way, in the show notes, in the YouTube description. Anybody who wants to reach out to Santi, anybody who wants to check out Paragon or his other affiliate companies, you know, go down to the show notes. But anything else we're missing here, brother?
No, man. I mean, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know that it took a little time to get on. But I'm glad to see that you are healthy and glad to see that things are going well. And I'm sure that soon in the future, whenever the show's open, we will be running into each other again so you could see my sexual hair, which, by the way, not so sexual right now because there is no barbershop that's open. So, we'll run into each other again, and maybe next time we'll grab a beer.
How often do you have to go into the barbershop and get that thing taken care of?
That thing. I try to just go like once every two weeks is fine.
That's manageable. That's not too crazy. That's not bad at all.
Once every 2 weeks is fine, and it's walking distance now from where I'm at. So
beautiful.
So maybe that'll turn into once a week.
Okay, get some neat cardio in there. All right, guys. For another episode of Think Big Bodybuilding Media and Vices Radio, IFBB Pro Santi Aragon. Thanks a lot, Santi. We appreciate you, brother.
Thank you. Peace.